Zane, Morteza, and Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. So, Charlie, how many years does this make for the Cincinnati Auto Expo?
Well, we're celebrating our 30th year since the show was reintroduced in 1988 at the Convention Center. The show actually has a very long history here in Cincinnati. We were just across the street at Music Hall in the early 1900s, about 1907. But ultimately, as you can imagine, those cars looked a lot more like carriages with motors, and about half of them were steam, as you talk about.
Cars have changed over the years.
Yeah. Absolutely. We outgrew that space, and back in 88, we got started again and been running strong for 30 years.
So it's grown considerably during those 30 years, I take it.
No question. And, as the convention center has expanded over the years several times, that's allowed us to expand. But within the last couple of years, we've moved throughout the convention center as well. So there's a lot to show, a lot to see, and you need the space.
31 manufacturers. I had no idea that there were even that many involved in the automotive industry.
There are a lot. And we're very fortunate here in Cincinnati. We're able to showcase the manufacturers and dealers that are active in the community, and they bring out their best.
What's attendance like for the Auto Expo?
Oh, you know, it's crazy, especially on Saturday and Sunday. We'll have four people scanning tickets. It'll be nothing but just beep, 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 beep. So it's been really great. Hopefully this ice storm, I think we're about done with that for the weekend, and we're looking forward to really having a big weekend.
So what can somebody do at the Auto Expo? What makes it a unique event?
Well, one of the things, about third of our people come every year. They just love to see what's new and what's being offered out there. The other two-thirds of the people are generally in a buying a mode. So they'll come and see us every couple of years. The great thing about the show is usually everybody has kind of a want list. And so you can compare those vehicles. You can walk over. You can get in the back seat of a Camry. You can walk across the aisle and sit in the new car of the year, the Honda Accord, and say, hey, which one works better for me? Often, too, we find that people find other vehicles that maybe weren't on their list, and they'll kind of work through it that way, and then they go see their favorite dealer and go buy a car.
Well, what's the trend in what consumers are buying these days?
Crossovers are huge. Cars may have always been, whether they've been compact, mid-size, large cars, they've always been the big segment. This past year, that made up about 35% of the market. Crossovers made up 35% of the market. And it's anticipated that in 2018, crossovers will actually overtake cars.
Why do you think they're so popular, Charlie?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the utility of these vehicles. They really, really fit into a lifestyle, whether you have a family or just yourself or a couple, where you can do just about anything with them. Put down the seats, put up the seats. The other thing is these vehicles now are getting some really good fuel efficiency. It's not like the old days where you had to give up something to drive an SUV, and that something was fuel efficiency. So they're getting about the same kind of mileage. They're more utilitarian, and they look pretty nice too.
Mm-hmm. So how much does the automotive industry contribute to the Cincinnati area?
Well, we're a big part of greater Cincinnati. We employ over 6,000 people. Here in the tri-state area, we contribute mightily to the tax base for our local communities, both in collecting it and in paying it for property tax and CAT and others. About 18 cents out of every dollar of sales tax that's collected is collected by your local new car dealer. And of course, that's based on the price of a new or used car. They're expensive items. You're going to pay sales tax. But that's a vital source of revenue for local communities.
So what's new at the expo this year?
Well, we've got a couple of things. We have our guests here, and of course, we're going to talk about their exhibit here in just a second. But we also have the National Corvette Museum and NCM Motorsports Park. They're there as well. We also have a 4x4 fan zone, which is a exhibit of light-duty trucks and Jeeps that have been jacked up and light bars and all kinds of things. Kind of falls into the same parameter of what NKU and UC are doing, and we'll talk about in a second. So, and of course, all the latest and greatest cars.
So talk about the exhibit that you have, Morteza. These are off-road vehicles that have been designed by NKU students and UC students. And
correct. Our vehicle has been designed by students. They have last year's car there. And this year's car, the frame is done. And they are still working to complete it for the competition coming up in June. They have the exhibit from the vehicle from last year, from NKU, the NKU students.
Zane, tell us a little bit more about that vehicle.
Yeah, so the Baja project is basically, it was started in about 1976, and it started out as a small amount of schools kind of involved with it, and over the years it's grown into international. So we're going to Kansas, and there's going to be schools from all over the world. We're going to have people from India, Canada, Mexico, South America, and as well as about probably 80 or 90 schools from the U.S. And basically what we're tasked with is we have to design, build, test, race, fundraise a Baja vehicle. And what a Baja is, it's basically like a dune buggy, but it's not just for the dunes. It's for everywhere, woods, trees, all that kind of stuff, mud. And the idea is we take it out to the race and we just kind of race against the other schools and see how we do. And hopefully we're going to do pretty well this year.
Why a Baja vehicle as opposed to some other type of vehicle?
So the SAE, Society of Automotive Engineers, they have multiple competitions. There's actually 8 competitions they have. And one of them is an F1 car. So, you know, you're just going for speed on the street. They have a clean snowmobile competition. They have Baja and other companies. I think they even have one for flying. And what it is basically the Baja is, it's really cool to get into. So it's really applicable to pretty much anywhere in the country. It's not like you have to be on a racetrack for it. You can just go drive around the woods and have fun on it. So that's kind of the appeal to it, is that anybody can hop in it and have fun.
Kind of a simple thing to design, is it, Zane? Or
no, it sounds simple. Oh, it's just a go-kart that goes over trees and logs and all that. But it's a lot of research and design. So it's not so much a race. Everybody thinks, oh, Baja's just a big race. Really, it's a design competition. It's an engineering competition. So you're really, every little piece of the car, even every little nut, bolt, washer, needs to be documented and engineered properly. And you have to show that to the judges, not only in the race, but in a presentation. So you do a sales presentation, a design presentation. You submit a cost report. You have to get your Baja inspected to make sure it fits the rules, which is a 115-page document this year. And yeah, there's a lot to go over.
So, well, it's a lot like actually being in the automobile industry, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's what they're really looking for. They're trying to make it as applicable to the real world as possible. So it's not just some fake race that has no real world experience. It's as soon as you get out of the Baja competition, you actually have those skills that you can take to industry and work for any automotive manufacturer, and they'd be happy you were on that team.
Yeah, Morteza, how does this apply? How does this help the students?
The students do the design. And they use what they learn in the classes, in the design classes, in the manufacturing classes. So they bring the knowledge they gain from different classes into this project. And the beauty of this is that they will be, once they built and test the vehicle, the SAE engineers will test the vehicle. So somebody from outside, not from inside the school, will judge their design, and if there's anything wrong with it, they have to fix it before they can go on to the next stage in the design. So in that way, they culminate the knowledge they gain through the program by participating in teamwork, by designing, by manufacturing, and then competing.
So it's a lot of real world experience. For
a lot
the
of
students.
Real world experience. Yeah. That's correct.
Any surprises as you've been doing this thing?
Yeah, this is actually my first year being a part of something like this. I've designed go-karts and stuff like that in the past. I've been in manufacturing my whole life. I graduated from vocational school. I'm a transfer student from Cincinnati State, so we did a very similar project over there. But as you know, from the beginning, you think, okay, this is going to be pretty easy to lay this out and get through it. But every little step of the process, there's something that goes wrong and nothing, you know, and then you have to adapt to it. And that's how it is in the real world, too. It's not like everything you make in the computer is not going to work out and be perfect in the real world. So when we were designing our frame, yeah, it looked great on the computer, but we actually built it on a PVC and sat inside of it and kind of felt around and said, okay, the ergonomics are good here, but not so much where my feet are. So we had to change that stuff on the computer, rebuild it before we actually got out the steel and welded it.
Now, if the, in the world of design, what do they call that? Ideations? Is that the word for it?
Yeah. So you're just making basically a prototype of the part, and you just go through multiple versions of it.
Mm-hmm, you'll go through a bunch of those before you finally.
And you just refine it and get it as good as you can get it. And if you think about some of the teams who've been doing it since the 70s, their cars are really, really refined. NKU is pretty new to this. We've only been doing this since 2008. So we got into the game pretty late. But we still have a really good resource, and we have a great machine shop and great faculty to help us get through this.
And Mortiza, how many students take part in this?
We have students from different majors taking part, about 20, Zane?
We're growing actually every week. We get more people interested in it, especially getting exposure like this. We might get some more members joining in, but it's not just engineering students. So that's the big core of it. So like as captain, I control basically the design of it, but our co-captain, he does the fundraising. We have a welding specialist. We have a machining specialist. So we break it down, individual parts, individual teams that come together and build the final product. And it's not just engineering. We have business majors, marketing majors, web designers, and it helps us really get a good final product out there, just like the real world. You're not just working with engineers. You're working with everybody.
You sound like you've really enjoyed this, Zane.
Oh, I love it. It's a lot of fun.
Charlie, what's one thing that you've seen change in the auto industry since you started in it?
Well, actually, I've been in it, Mark, for since 1995, so much has changed. If someone's the average car on the road right now is about 11 years old, actually a little older than that. And if you're one of those people like me that holds on to their car for a long time, the changes are phenomenal. The one car that I have is a fun car, and it's a 2005. There's no GPS. There's no interconnectivity. There's barely a cup holder, to be frank with you. And, you know, on the other hand, it's just a car. Imagine that, right? And on the other hand, I happened to get a new car last spring. I've got internet. My phone connects when I walk into it. The GPS, it tells me if I'm moving out of my lane. It brakes for me if I'm coming up too fast on somebody who's at a stoplight because, I'm not watching what I'm doing. It's that technology. And that technology has really trickled down, not just from the luxury vehicles where it started, but down to the cars that most of us are driving every day.
You know, you're talking about you've had your car for about 11, 12 years. Mm-hmm. I'll give my age away. I remember a time where you couldn't keep a car for 3 or 4 years because it would start to rust.
I grew up in the 70s, and I've had a good buddy who had older brothers and sisters, and they all came of age about the same time and bought new cars, and we were a few years behind them. And by the time we were 16, none of those cars were still on the road. And things have really, really changed. I mean, 100,000 miles is not really a milestone anymore. It's part of it.
Mm-hmm. Mortiza, what are some of the trends you see and that are changing in the car design world?
The driver assistant technology, as it was mentioned, is big. Autonomous cars, there's a lot of talk about autonomous cars, but what I see is the technology trickling down, helping drivers maintain their speed and their control and so forth. So I think in the future, we'll see more of in automation. When you talk automation, they talk about that you adopt a robot when there is a difficult and dirty and dull job. And it looks like in driving, if you're driving a long distance and you don't want to fall asleep, the technology that is adopted, it helps you, the dullness of driving or the difficulty of if somebody is not alert. So I think those technologies are great, and they're coming. I rented a Toyota not too long ago, a Corolla, and it had, detected lanes, and it didn't let me go through a continuous line on and so forth. So those are I see those trends coming down.
So it seems like it's a gradual introduction of the idea of a driverless car. You've got step-by-step things where maybe the car detects something in front of you and it brakes for you, or like you're saying, lane changes.
Absolutely.
So is that part of getting people to accept this idea of the driverless car, Zane?
Yeah, I think the more it becomes accessible and you just get used to it, it's kind of like where we were talking about smartphones earlier. How in the beginning, it was just like, hey, I had a flip phone, it makes calls. And now we have a phone that does everything and calls are almost secondary. So as it kind of comes more into the industry, you'll get more and more used to it, and it's going to get better and better. So we had an automation class at NKU, and they were talking about a concept called deep learning, which is a machine learning technique where a machine basically just tries something over and over again and has a lot of failures and some successes, and it records all that data. And that's kind of where driverless cars are going. So it's just collecting a lot of data to apply that to the best driving situations.
Yeah, Zane, you know, Americans at one time, they and still to some extent, they have this love affair with their cars. And kids couldn't get, they just couldn't wait to get their driver's license. Is that still the way it is with the younger generation?
I'd say yes and no. Like when I went to school, there was a group of my friends were, you know, referred to as gearheads. We loved working with engines and all that. We loved our cars. We loved our vehicles. But then there's other students who just weren't so interested in that. They could get around with the bus or have, you know, an Uber or Lyft pick them up or anything like that. So that they, some folks feel like they don't need a car. I can get around my bicycle. But there's definitely a core group of people who just really love vehicles, and that's kind of what the Baja team's about.
Yeah, and I wonder how much people are going to accept driverless cars because we have that independent streak, and a lot of us who are older have that, still love our cars and still like to drive, Mortiza.
Yes, you know, driverless cars, it takes a lot culturally for people to accept driverless cars. And of course, you know, I think driverless trucks, where it's going to be on the highways, probably will pick up and will be the trend soon. But with driverless cars, in my opinion, I think the driver assisted technology will increase to the extent that at all of a sudden we see, well, my car is operating fully even if I don't drive it. So it will be gradual. Increase in technology as we go through, and we get there. We'll have driverless cars pretty soon in the near future.
Driverless trucks sounds a little intimidating, though. I mean, are they as safe as say a driverless just a car?
Well, you know, if you look at the technology that is out there today, drivers get fatigued. So having driverless cars doesn't mean that you don't have absolutely no drivers in the cab. The technology will help the drivers. And I'm not an expert in driverless technology, but that's based on my studies and so forth. I see that that's the trend. Tesla is working on driverless cars or electric trucks, and pretty soon we'll have trucks that are semi-autonomous, let's put it that way.
So you think soon we'll have more and more driverless cars. Where do you think it's going to be? We're going to see that the most, a certain part of the country, a certain city, or?
In my opinion, we'll have it in the on highways sooner than intercities, because the amount of decision-making in the cities, the congested cities, It will take a lot of calculations and basically computational power from driverless cars to get there. But you see the companies that are investing in that technology already. Uber has tried that, and pretty soon we'll have, if not fully autonomous cars, autonomous cars that are semi-autonomous and help us avoid crashes and help us drive safer.
Charlie, what are your thoughts on when and where for driverless vehicles?
You know, the when is always tough. I think generally speaking, we're over predictors of change. We get very enthusiastic. Many of us have seen tremendous change, and we do, but I was talking to my mom the other night, and She was talking about a seminar she went to, and there was this magic machine. It was called a microwave, and it would cook all your meals, and you wouldn't need a stove anymore, and that was the way that was going to be. Well, my mom's in her mid-70s, and at the time, she was in her early 20s. So it takes decades to make a lot of these changes. I think it will take some time. I do agree that there's going to be – we'll see gradual change in autonomy. We've already seen in some surveys from consumers that they seem to be more accepting of autonomy. You know, the initial surveys when they came out and said, hey, how about a car that'll drive you around and you won't have to do anything? People were a little leery mm-hmm. of that. I think they still remain that way. But as you see more and more of these features that are in our cars already and will be in the next several years, I think the acceptance grows. And but we have challenges, you know, liability issues, maintenance on the equipment. This is very technical equipment. What happens when those cars are 8, 9, 10 years old? Will the LIDAR radar continue to work as well, or whatever technology we're using at that time? How will it be maintained? What's going to be the cost of these vehicles? The average new vehicle now is $35,000. So will we be able to afford them? Those are some of the questions we have. We'll work through them. We always do. But they're a challenge.
Charlie, thank you for joining me today. Ortiza, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Zane, thank you.
Thanks.
Greater Cincinnati Automobile Dealers Association Executive Vice President Charlie Howard, Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor, Director of Engineering Technology and Faculty Advisor of Norse Baja, Mortiza Sadat, and Northern Kentucky University Mechanical and Manufacturing Engineering Technology Student and Captain of Norse Baja, Zane Decker. You can find a link to more information about the 2018 Cincinnati Auto Expo at WVXU.org. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition. The producer was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Josh Elstro was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney.